Hi, I'm Josh, and no, look, I know what it says on Google Maps, but this is 823 Forest Road. I'm sure that you want to bring that Olive Garden to 825 Forest Road, because they're going to be really sad if they don't get their breadsticks, and that lady out in the yard looks hella creepy.
It's true.
Hey, I'm Matt, and I think The Rule of Jenny Penn is a great introduction to a new shared cinematic universe, for where else have we seen Dr. Lizardo and Casanova Frankenstein in a movie together?
I mean, it's hard to argue with that. It's a good point.
The Mystery Men and Buckaroo Banzai versus.
My God, the Marquis de Sade and the Third Rock from the Sun or whatever. God almighty, what careers those two men have had. This is Charlie Dodd Austin. Now look, I mean, we here at Horseshoe Hot Dog and Twin Cities Genre Film Festival Incorporated are just as sensitive to Reddit comments as the next person. But I don't really like somebody leaving a review of the podcast saying that there's just more of a dead talent society.
And you best start believing in Horror Story Hot Dog, because you're in one. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Pretty None good. Of that came out right, but that's part of our ramshackle charm.
Yeah.
So first up, we had a short called Pentatarmex Rabitular.
Yeah, I want to
know. Hello, Pentatarmex Rabitular.
What is, Matthew, what the hell with you? Did you do this?
I did. Yeah,
he did.
I mean, why'd you do this to me? Why you do
like
this to
make
me?
You didn't like this one?
No.
No?
It's going to be a no for me, this dog.
We're trying to let you down gently because it's still early in the show.
So basically, a woman who lives with her grandmother has grandmother die, and she has to move to the city, and she is kind of pining for the fjords as well as slowly going broke. We hear that she answers a newspaper ad that promises some outrageous payout and seems to compel her to go sit by a what looks like an open manhole in the yard, right? And she gets calls on a flip phone that tell her the number that corresponds to whatever act of sacrifice she has to do that day. So, like, she makes it food. She gives it, the jizz of a guy she had sex with. And ultimately what gets her big payoff is cutting off her thumb and tossing it down the hole. But we never get any detail about what a pentatarmex rabitular is or where what it can do or why of any. I think that this could work with all of these ingredients and without giving us more information if it were 5 minutes shorter. Mm-hmm. As it is, it's so patient, I always say, instead of slow.
Yeah.
And you just like, because the things that she's doing don't have any inherent meaning or purpose. You're just watching her do them and going, well, that's a weird thing that she has to do with the hole today. Like, what are we going to do with the hole today, boss? And ultimately, I could not discern the whole point.
So what was this? And I will say this with no amount of condescension or pith, but what was it about this
vinegar
that you get pith? All right. What about this did you like, you dumb son of a bitch?
This is one that I was hesitant to suggest, so make of that what you will. But what Excellent. Did finally have me suggested is that this is in like the little bookmark folder I have for stuff to do it on the show at some point. And this one's been in that folder for at least a year where I just kind of go, I can't quite tell if that works, but then I watch it each time I kind of look through that folder and I haven't found anything yet. I'll end up rewatching it. And by like the sixth or seventh time, I'm like, well, there's something about this. So it's worth putting it out there and seeing if it's just me or if it's, you know, something in this is working. It turns out it's just me, but that's okay.
I like parts of it. Just the parts are, I mean, they're too far apart.
I can see the pacing being an easy fix for that. This is one where I guess I just, in that way of, you know, my love of folklore-ish type stuff, this is one that, yeah, because it's all like clearly has rules, but they don't make any real practical sense. And we're just sort of allowed to stew in this reality for a bit and see an outcome. And it's like, yep, this is just like what's happening on this block, and something equally weird but different might be happening on the next block. And it, mm-hmm. I don't know, it posits a universe that makes my imagination kind of get stuck on it. So that's why I like this, but I can see how your mileage may vary.
Furthermore, I don't understand the sex scene a whole lot. I can feel my brain reassembling this into something that I would like a lot. And I guess if I watched it a couple more times, I would be more clearly able to see that version of it. But I like a pointless, weird ritual thing. Like, that's all Dark Song is until the perfect ending of it, right? It's just elaborate ritual meant to bring about a thing, I guess. I suppose. I don't know. I watched two other shorts for the film festival today that I thought were much better than this one.
Yeah, fair enough. There are some good ones so far.
Well, this is a not for me, dog.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna hold it against you necessarily, because I do think that is the one thing,
maybe,
like, to some degree with features certainly, and certainly with episodic television, but I would say probably the most with shorts, where like you could watch a block of shorts at a festival or just online or whatever, and we've done this where we watch a thing and we go like, I really like this one, and like, you're insane, that one's no good, this other one's good, like, you like that one doesn't make a damn bit of sense, it made perfect sense for these 9 different things, like, no, but I like this other one, like, that one was terrible, like, oh, this was great. And like, I think that happens with shorts probably, I think would say more so than almost anything else, because especially when you batch them in, you can kind of get like, I think about, was it, is it Camera Obscura or whichever one that was that had the deer, or it's like, that was my favorite one, mm-hmm. and both of you were just like, is that? And I was like, well, this is the reason why, like, oh, I guess it wouldn't have, and it wasn't like you're like being like, it wasn't like people being mean or whatever, it's more just like, oh, that wasn't the way that occurred to me, okay, like, you know, right. It's like one of those things, it's just like, it's kind of funny how that works more so, I think, with shorts than anything else, really, is that.
Yeah, you can definitely have mileage varying, and if you see three in a session, then like the middle one will strike you different than if it had been at the end.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
I'm kind of thinking about that as I'm watching shorts for the festival, to go like, okay, like, on its own, it's almost there. And if it's just a thing that you get that weird abrupt ending, but then you move on to the next thing, like, then that would probably be better. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like making a mixtape. You know?
Dude, it is like making a mixtape. There is a service,
there are many rules, yeah.
By the way, that will allow you to compile a mixtape for someone and send it to them. I believe it is just a USB drive that looks like a tape rather than a cassette, and they charge like $75. It's like, you know what I could buy for way cheaper at the Goodwill is a cassette player that has a double deck, or a CD and a cassette. And then I could just make everyone mixtapes and send them, and everyone would be like, we never check our physical mail anymore, so we don't even know what this is.
Yeah, it's a beautiful dream. When I see young people doing the thing with the cassettes, I'm just sort of like, you do understand that format just sucks, though, is the thing. Like,
yeah.
It's like, you know, a bunch of like 18-year-olds are sort of like, you know, using leeches for headaches because it's cool. Like, no, man. Like, we figured it out. It's better to do not that. Like, cassettes are bad. Like, it's like, don't do it. And it's like, whenever I see like a couple of record stores, they have like little racks of like, you know, or like the last couple of record store days, they've had some releases they've done for cassettes. I'm just like, you fucking bastards. Like, stop it.
I don't know. I feel like you haven't really heard Guns N' Roses till you've heard it with Tape Hiss.
No. You haven't heard it until you've walked around a traveling carnival where the prizes are little crackled mirrors and, you know, potentially HPV. So. That's kind of how that works. At least that's how it was in my hometown. So, you know, how that
goes. Yeah, I think that's why the riff for Sweet Child of Mine just arrests me in my anytime I see it, or anytime I see it with my ears. Yeah. Anytime I hear it, it just stops me dead in my tracks for a second, because it is that, like, riding the zipper and flipping around with this girl that I thought was really cute, and like hiding in the haunted house, and you know, like wondering if I throw the ball and can I actually hit something and get the bear, or like look at all the weird pinup titties that are just on display in this one booth for the family to walk by. Like, yeah, takes you back.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, yeah, very aggressively.
A lot of titties. Maybe that was just my discerning eye. I don't know. Anyway, we watched three movies this week, which might surprise no one. And the first one that I really think we should start with is The Rule of Jenny Penn.
I say so.
All killer, no filler. And yeah. You could say La Regla de Jenny Penn, but that's more of like a rule or regulation. So I would say like El Reino de Jenny Penn, which is like the kingdom of Jenny Penn.
Ah.
Oh, there you go. That works. Yeah, also, when you said discerning eye, Josh, you really threw me off, because I've been reading these things. I'm sorry, super fast digression. So there's the lead singer guy of the band Trivium, who are fucking awesome, guy Matt Hafey. He's half Japanese by descent, and he did a kid's book a while back called Ibaraki and Friends, and it's like little kid's limericks about various type of Japanese sort of spirits and ghosts and legends and things. It's a really cool little book, which is awesome. There's a thing about Kepa, and it makes little jokes about like they toot threefold because they have three buns and stuff like that, and Joe thinks that's hilarious. So, but anyway, it's a lovely little thing, and I love Trivium. It's all great, but it got me thinking, like, I think I have a book on some of these. So I was go back and look at some of these different legends and ghosts and things, and how silly some of them are. And the one that just popped up was the one that guy has the giant yellow eyeball on his butt, and like he's like not dangerous or threatening or doesn't harm people. Yeah. He just thinks it's really funny to surprise people that he has a big yellow eyeball on his butt.
I guess if it was just like an ordinary looking person who showed you that, then you'd be like, yeah, damn. Okay.
Yeah, so when you said discerning eye, that was what
that was the eye.
Yep.
The brown eye.
I need to give these documents the old discerning eye. If you wouldn't mind turning around for a minute.
Going.
Sir, this is a bank.
This really makes my brown eye yellow. So
Jesus Christ. Bad my, we were.
Just whoever we ever. My epiphany with this movie is that it takes a British boarding house movie and turns it into a nursing home movie.
Yeah,
that's kind of genius, because it's a little bit like Suspiria did with making all of the women kind of act 13. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and everything's kind of scaled up around them. Like, this has people at the other end of life sometimes tend to kind of regress back into some of those patterns, right? Mm-hmm. So this takes like a kids at school movie, and it's old people who are kind of acting juvenile, right? And you put that all together and somehow it works really, really well. Especially if you cast like John Lithgow and Jeffrey Rush, who just, I mean, John Lithgow is magnetic in this thing.
Yeah,
every single scene that he's in, he is just kind of gleeful menace personified. Like, we kind of missed out having him as a Joker.
Mm.
Watching him in this, but I don't know. Maybe it's for the best, considering what happened with Jared Leto.
Well, the other thing with this one too, one of the things that stands out for me is like, this is also, I would say, falls in that category, even though it's not really like super graphic necessarily. I would say this is falls in that category of like a tough one to recommend to normal people. Hmm. Because like, it is very, very unpleasant. Like, I mean, it's enjoyable to watch because it's very well made and the performances are amazing, but it is like, it's roundly unpleasant. Like, it's just, there's a lot of this that's just like, it's even Jeffrey Rush's character, like, is just kind of this obnoxious dude. And like some of the ways that he says things, like, maybe it's American sensibility, I guess, but like, sometimes there's some things that are said, like, just to somebody's face. And you're like, what is wrong with you? Like, this is very insensitive, shitty thing. It's just like, no, this is just normal. Like, this is just normal being is that. And so, like, there's a lot of this movie that is just very uneasy. And like, it's, I just think, like, I think a normal person watching this is going to have a really tricky time, because it is, it's not like a popcorny thing so much as it is kind of like, it's just like, it's, and Lithgow especially, you don't ever know what the fuck he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And you don't really know if there's an actual, if there really is a demon-y thing, or if there really is a supernatural thing, or whatever else, or it's just fucking human nature. And so it's there, like, ugh.
There's two things that I feel like sort of came through for me in watching this, and they're like, one's obvious, right? There's like misery, mm-hmm. where you've got obviously someone who is physically diminished in some capacity, you know, fending off someone who, while not, you know, outwardly appearing not all that dangerous, but clearly, you know, a threat. And like, that's great. And that's fun. And that's a formula that works. And then I think, to kind of go along with what you were saying, Charlie, the part that levels this whole thing up for me is that the other thing this feels like to me is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, mm-hmm. where yeah. from the moment you're kind of in it, like once those kids are in that house, you are never happy or comfortable again. You're itchy. You know, because at any moment this could go so wrong, even though one is like a relatively nice looking nursing home situation, you know, there's a dump, but like, it is that same idea that like, oh, every moment, every floorboard creak, every dark corner, every hallway turn, like all of that could lead to something awful, because the movie lets you know that that could happen at any time. And I thought that was like a really way, a way to make what, like I said, what makes a very kind of almost innocuous looking villain seem much more sinister and imposing.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. And I would, you know, the other thing too, the thing I was really reflecting on rewatching this, I almost said rewatching again. I was not redundant. That is, rewatching this was that like, was you get that regionality stuff where, mm. you know, there are certain things about certain Australian and New Zealand films that's like they do a certain thing better than like anybody else will do, and I would argue that a lot of it is the disquieting, discomfort stuff. Like, it made me think of like, Patrick, or even like the first third of Dead Alive, not the whole thing of Dead Alive, but like the first third. Right. Or there's that one about the Snowtown murders years ago. Was it Snowtown? Like that one has some of that stuff in there too, where it's just like the Square, the thriller movie, one of my favorite movies the last 20 years. The thriller movie, it's just like that's got certain moments where you're just like, I want to crawl out of my fucking skin. And it's not being because they're trying to make you uneasy like a scene from The Office or something, but it's just like they have this way of just injecting good into stuff. And like there's so many moments in this one that have that same quality where like, you know, where like, you know, the people are just sitting around watching the television, or they're sitting here trying to play a game, and Lithgow is just cackling like just to the rooftop in the corner, just like this level of like, it's like hearing like a couple argue in a grocery store. Like, it's just like that level of, God, this is very uncomfortable. And it just amplifies, it just goes and goes and goes. And then then you get those punctuation points of the nighttime scenes, which are just like, you don't know what's going to happen. You have no way to know, like, is he just going to just start capping people? Or is like, is there something evil, like legitimately evil, like, or tangibly evil, whatever? What is it going to be? And so then you're like, then the daytime breaks. You're like, yeah, but daytime's not safe either. And I was like, ah, shit. And so it's like, you just spend a whole lot of time being uneasy in a way that's like, it's very New Zealand / Australia. It's like, they're better than anybody at it. It's amazing.
It's weird to experience because he's not like a slasher, and he's almost less a bully than just a toddler. Like he's just a dick. Mm-hmm. And he's a dick in ways that you would never expect people to be, like, for no reason and with no thought about how he will appear to other people. It's like, For me, the most telling one was sitting next to the lady in the cafeteria and just taking her bowl of soup.
Yeah.
And he's just like, this is mine now. And the orderly comes over and says, if you want more soup, we'll get you more soup. And so there's no point. It's not even a finite resource.
Right.
Yeah. He just wants to take something that's hers. And like the first night that he goes into Jeffrey Rush's room, he just throws the dude's bottle of night piss all over him. So it looks like he peed his pants. And of course, no one's ever going to believe that someone else peed your pants.
Yeah.
And it's just, but my favorite is the, where people are dancing and having like a good time for a minute. And he just comes in and just holds a little rave, like a little slow motion rave in the middle of everyone, just spinning around and karaming off people. He's like, he's just this full force of chaos. And then Jeffrey Rush is like the very upright and, you know, disdainful kind of guy who's always thinking about what people think of you. And playing them off each other is just fascinating. And then just having his like bodily getting weaker to the point where it seems like he's, there's no way he stands a chance. And then we see the really evil side of Lithgow when he sets somebody loose and they just end up dying in the woods. Right. Mm-hmm. And like just in the nick of time, they raise the stakes even higher. And then we realize that there's really only one way to deal with Jenny Penn. And that's, murder. Yeah.
Just
a little bit of murder. I was fully expecting an unhappy ending to this movie, and it kind of ends up being a happy one.
Yeah.
And it changes the whole nature of the nursing home too. Because it's like, instead of focusing on how miserable he is, he like sits down and plays cards with the other guys. He's like, you know what? This isn't the most thrilling thing in the world, but it beats having a guy try and rape you with a puppet.
Right.
Yeah.
So it seems like we like he learned a little something. Like for me, that I was surprised at how willing this was to be warm by the end of it, having spent so much time just like showing me unabashed dickery. I don't know. Did you pick up on the like slightly wholesome and warm, or am I insane?
I think it has a little bit of that. There's, but it also really tests you as a viewer because like you know Lithgow's behavior notwithstanding, the thing he does with the inhaler, and then like just like the thing he does with the inhaler, and then the thing that we're just like straight up like just him and the Mary guy like straight up murdering him. It's like it's extreme. Like you really really gonna get way beyond what their normal bandwidth is really, and that's like, and so it's impressive to see how far they push it for a character who's not like the most sympathetic in the world.
Yeah.
It's like, that's fascinating too. Like every time you expect him to do the nice thing, he's like, nope, I refuse. Yeah,
he's steadfastly unpleasant.
Yeah. It's just like, it reminds me a little bit of like the Man on the Inside, the Ted Danson show, which was really enjoyable and lovely by the same people who did The Good Place. And there's one person in the nursing home, or the care home where he is, and it's like, and this guy's just sort of like, it's like even when he's like kind of turned the corner, this character has turned the corner and become nice, he like he can't help but be unpleasant, but he's like nice unpleasant, and like in this case, like the Jeffrey Rush's character, like nope, no, I will just stand firm with my plan of just being a dick. Like every time I expect him to, like with the Miori guy, says something, he like opens up to him and he just sort of goes like, shit on this, piss on this, screw yourself, whatever. What are we doing later?
Like, it's like, grow no sizes this day.
Yeah, it's like his heart grew no sizes that day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just sort of like, so that's interesting because, you know, he goes to some extreme levels and the thing kind of goes to extreme levels, and we're not given like a cuddly bear kind of character. He's just a victim of his own humanity, basically. It's just like, well, that's a hell of a thing to do.
I think it would have made a difference if Lithgow's behavior doesn't ever escalate and they still kill him. That is, to me, is a way different feeling movie.
Oh, yeah, no, because 100%. That's a great point.
If it is just like, this guy is terrorizing all of us and he's just a dick and we're done, that is a different brand of black comedy than this having... He knew that he was basically murdering that lady, shoving her out the gate, or he didn't even ponder whether that would be basically murdering that lady, which is worse.
Yeah. So
that got me on Jeffrey Rush's side, and more, and also that he's just continues to deteriorate physically. Mm-hmm. That just makes it you have a lot more sympathy for him. Like, dude, this guy, like, Lithgow, why are you bullying him? He can't even move. Like, he's in a wheelchair, for fuck's sake. Have you no dignity? And he's like, well, no, I have no decency. No. That's the whole point. So, I don't know. It was interesting to think that without... that, like, John Lithgow is just kind of the metaphor for, like, I hate that I'm in here and I hate that, you know, everything's shitty now and my body has betrayed me and just all of that bitterness and malice that he had. And all of those things that we see the old people doing that just seem brutally awful and boring and soul-sucking in the beginning. At the end, it's like, oh, well, like, they can actually enjoy life if they choose to, you know, or at least have like a nice game of cards with
a community. Like,
yeah. And but it's the same place. It's just his perception of it has changed so much. I found.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe not. I don't know.
Or else.
Or else.
No, I think that covers it. I do want to mention briefly, I almost forgot that it's been a while since I actually watched it, so I can't pick examples, but I do remember that there were some like really kind of weird choices for like camera and sound throughout this movie.
Yeah, and for sure.
I do remember going like, that was fucking weird and that might turn people off of this, but I almost would like him to lean further into that because that shit was really crazy, but it never got annoying. I was just always kind of fascinated by it. Or not.
Yeah, I agree, and well, and also too, yeah, because there's some unconventional things that they do, and some things that they kind of leave up to interpretation. But then also, I really enjoy the, you know, without actually saying it in a monologue, but like, you know, he's used to presiding over a courtroom and being kind of this like arbiter of stuff, and then like, you know, we very much see that there's no ambiguity. Like, Lithgow's character is just doing the thing that his character is doing, and then like. Then Jeffrey Rush is like, I will obviously present the reasonable facts, and then therefore this will be taken seriously. And it's just like, first time he says something to the main nurse lady, the nurse lady's like, sure, that there was somebody in your room that did this whole thing, whatever else, like this, that, whatever. And it's like, and then the next thing comes up, and it's just like, well, he made a complaint about you that you did this. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what is this? It's like, and he's like, and it's this nice kind of mirroring of Lithgow's behavior towards him, which is like, sometimes people are just shitty for no reason. Like, that's just kind of a thing. And it's like, I think it's for Jeffrey Rush's character, he just doesn't, he's not really necessarily had to deal with it this way, in this direct way before. And like, and so it's having to like recalibrate to like, not because he's like an emperor necessarily, but he's used to like, well, when somebody presents something as a fact, and it is a fact, and it is dealt with accordingly. It's like, eh, not really. Like,
and people are respecting his station, and
yeah. Like, the first time Lithgow says judge is as if he was just peeing on your foot, and I'm just like, it's like, whoa, man. It's an interesting character study that I think, like I said, it's tricky to recommend to average people, but it's really cool.
Like, or maybe I have turned Jess into a no longer average person. Like, I can't use her as my normie anymore, but she thought it was fantastic too.
I do think it is more approachable than a lot of other stuff that would be kind of middling entry level horror. Because much like Misery, you know, it's just people. It's a psychological.
It's very human scale. Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's not, you're not going to have a crazy bonkers, whatever boogan pop out of something. So
that's true. I just sort of, it's just like some of the scenes just don't give you any release valve. Like, there's no PG-13-ing of the, or Lifetime channeling of the, the unease that they're presenting with. Like, even that dance sequence where when they're doing the dance sequence, it does play, not exploitive, but it does play kind of just a big bummer. Like, it's a happy bummer in a way. And so there's a lot of that kind of stuff in there, which I think, depending on the viewer, like, you just are like, I would maybe not like to be reminded of this being a thing, or watching somebody being treated poorly, or watching somebody's mind deteriorate. Or
how do you feel about cruelty to the elderly before we start this movie?
Yeah.
What if, like, it is also by the elderly? Does that make a difference? Right? Perhaps not. You know, I would rather watch the the patients be shitty to each other though than watch another like orderly beat up with somebody?
That's a really good point. Like
at least they're sort of evenly matched. I don't know.
Because that becomes kind of tired. I mean, we know that setup, we know that power dynamic, and it's not like having them be disinvolved, disinterested in general, does the job fine. Like it just sort of takes them out of the equation. The last thing I want to mention on this one is that that one scene where he's done the whole thing with the poor old woman. Oh, your family, you see him? You see him right there? That whole thing. Yeah. And then I can see them over there. They're waving at you and all that stuff. And then they'll open the door and then off she goes, whatever else. And then all the thing that transpires and the lighting and the way it's shot where her body's located, it's like, oh, it's so sad and cold and just bummer. But then he's like coming back in. He's got like, you know, and he's coming back in and his key card doesn't work. And it's like, oh, shit. Because he got the two key cards mixed around. And it's just like that look of humanness on his face of being like, it's like, I'm crazy and cruel and kind of busted up, but there's still a human in there that goes, oh, fuck. From a logistical standpoint, and then having to go out there and like he turns the body over and the whole thing, gets all the mud on him and the whole bit, and then the next shot you get after he has successfully been able to pull off this thing, the next shot you get is his like old ass body in the shower, like hosing off all the like the mud and grime and stuff, and it's like it really grounded the living shit out of like the threat that he actually possesses. Like he's not superhuman. There's no demon walking around. It's just like, it just brought right back down to the center. And which just keeps you, they do a great, great job of just interjecting those things, except for the one spot of Jenny Penn being like gigantic. I don't know what you guys made of that, but that was sort of like, I'm just going to let that go. Cause it's New Zealand. Like, okay, sure.
Yeah. There's just a couple of moments where they have like a giant computer model of it to loom as it does in someone's mind. And that's the only time it gets fanciful, too.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just pretty straightforward. And it's like,
okay. I think it works. Like, I think it's not hard to tell why it's doing that. I don't imagine people are going, a puppet cannot grow.
No. Pick up your monocle, good sir. It's okay. 'Tis metaphorical.
Here where no puppet can grow. So yeah, this one for me was I actually had fun with it to a degree that makes me concerned about myself as usual. Because boy do I not like a bully, and boy do I like seeing a bully get murdered slowly. This, by the way, has the proper length of time for strangling, I believe.
Yeah,
they at least a lot closer. Yeah, some of the recently I've seen at least a couple of things where there's like place hands around throat and person goes, and they're dead like 25 seconds. It's all it takes. Yeah. So this one, yeah, they stuck the landing for how real it was. So I don't know. It's cool. I would give it maybe an 8 out of 10. It's time to play the music. It's time to throw the piss.
Jesus.
Fantastic. Yeah, I am right there with you. I also gave this an 8. Fully enjoyable. Two amazing actors doing amazing work. Good fun, dark, tense, all that heavy horse shit. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, this is just one of those ones. It's just like, and I think really that above everything else, it is well shot. It is well made. I really admire the people that have made this. It is not an easy little. It's not easy. Lift necessarily. I mean, it's a kind of rough and tumble kind of a thing, but I really, above everything else, taking nothing away from anybody else that made this, like you have these two Titan level actors that are just really goddamn talented, like to an unbelievable degree. And I think it's not like the only thing that makes it work. It's not like that, but it's like that helps. It's like, you know, it's just these two guys who are just so unbelievably talented. So I mean, yeah, that's a big part of it. But as it stands, yeah, it's a weird, weird, interesting kind of a deal. And I just love that you don't have to. This is me saying this was just weird. I'm really glad that there wasn't necessarily like a whole bunch of grounded stuff like, well, the orderlies is investigating, or the police get involved in this, or the there's an investigation of this, or there's some ulterior motive, or there's whatever. Like, none of that stuff. Like, none of that's actually happening. Like, doesn't, it's not a thing. And yeah, sometimes that would bug me. In this case, it doesn't bug me at all. So yeah, I'll be right there with y'all. I'm going to say 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. I don't know, guys. I don't know if you had the same thing I did, but I was really relieved when he identified the object being thrown in Lithgow's face as pudding.
Yeah, that's...
But they, like the wonderful, you know, New Zealand and Australian filmmakers tend to do, they make you sit in it for a minute before they will identify what you've actually seen. You know, Rat Fink bastards.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick one break, that is, and then we'll come back and talk about these other two guys.
Yes, sir. We'll be back in a moment.
Dudes, gender neutral dudes. All right, so next up we have 825 Forest Lane or 825 Camino del Bosque.
Ah.
Yeah. I love Spanish numbers in the hundreds. He uses like 800.
As we're progressing through the workday, I will update my staff on how we're doing. So it'll be 300. And everybody's like, yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah. I'm learning Spanish numbers. It's pretty fun.
Oh, that's rad, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this movie comes to us from the crew that brought us Hell House LLC.
Stephen Cognetti.
Yeah, a fine movie, I thought, that didn't need to be a franchise, and yet it is like 4 or 5 movies deep now, with the last one being the infamous one with the 1,200-word title.
Oh, that's right.
No, it's Hell House LLC Origins : Carmichael Manor. TBD. So this is the first foray into a kind of conventionally shot movie, which I think is a little misleading because I think fully a third of the movie is in a like handheld or, you know, a format in which the camera is part of the scene.
I went into this excited that he was going to make a more traditional movie just to kind of go, okay, let's see like where does he stack up then as a director when it's more easy, you know, the comparison is more readily made between like one of his films and another person's film. And did it not just seem like he got dragged kicking and screaming away from found footage? Like,
there are so many cameras set up, you know.
Like between all the different cameras set up and then even the way that I think our whole story comes together, which is such a found footage thing of like cutting between different people and incomplete information that all kind of comes together at the end. But that's because people aren't seeing all the events in real time. And he just created that. But the solution was to just, okay, then I guess we got to follow 3 different people over the same half hour, like one after another. And it just... it looks like someone just recut a found footage movie to make it more linear, and it just doesn't work.
That is for me. Yeah, I think you got to mention that structure right off because that just kneecaps it so hard. Because we get ostensibly he's doing like a Rashomon, not a Rashomon, but like we get one person's point of view of the whole spooky thing, and then we get the second person's point of view and the third person's point of view. The problem is their point of views overlap a lot.
Yeah.
Like they are frequently in the same room. So it just means that we're seeing the same scenes and the same kind of borderline dialogue over and over. And it saps any kind of momentum out of the thing. I also was very confused throughout, and that just may be how I go through life these days. But the two women in the beginning, I could swear that one of them was the daughter that we follow later for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And it's just not like she just had a very similar face to the other lady. And that was confusing, but they didn't give me enough shit to hang on to that I could figure that out. Like the scene where he encounters the girl from opening scene in the library. It's like, okay, but is she really there, like crying in the library and nobody notices? Or is she a ghost? No, is she. And then they talk later about how she killed herself, but never really establish whether she was alive or dead when he saw her.
Yeah.
And it it just goes on like that. Like, this is a fairly straightforward kind of fucked place kind of thing. Like, this whole town has a sickness through it because of the way that we treated this one lady, right? And then it just, I don't know, it's so fragmented. And the only thing that works is the thing that worked in Hell House LLC, which is when the mannequin does the thing that the mannequin's not supposed to do.
Right.
Well, that's kind of the, to Matt's point, like, there's, you know, because of the way, you know, like when you describe it as like being kind of drag kicking and screaming into doing it like a conventionally shot kind of thing, I think that's one of the things that influenced the way that this is done, where I don't know about y'all, but like the, you know, the first little bit, first like 15 minutes or so, like I found it to be intriguing. Like, okay, this is interesting. There's like something that's like a little different than your typical, you know, grudge house or haunted whatever. It's like a different thing. Like, okay, this is cool. All right, I think this is kind of an interesting setup. But then once you kind of get into the meat of it, and you get from chapter one or chapter two, or chapter three, that part of things, like everything feels extremely telegraphed. Mm-hmm. Where like there's some good. There are some good moments in this. Like, there are some ones that gave, like, the one time where the friend from school is like, you know, like the meeting your mom and all that kind of stuff and whatever. Like, that scene is really well handled. Like, it's really well done. But like a lot of the other shit where she's doing her podcasting and then like the mannequin's behind her and then it's like it's starting to move and then people are sending their messages and stuff and she walks out of the room, comes back in the room, it's in a different position and whatever. Like, all that stuff is supposed to work like pa pa pa, but it just kind of, it's a slow like bubble. And so you just see like all those bits you see coming from like a mile away, and so it doesn't feel suspenseful. I'm not gonna say anticlimactic, but it just feels very much like just super, super undercooked to the point where you're like, well, this is what's going to happen next, and then it happens. And this is going to happen next, and this is going to happen. And so it's like, it just kind of, that whole middle stretch leading up to the end just feels super, super telegraphed. And I think maybe it is because of format, or maybe it's just, I don't know, but it's like none of those things played particularly suspenseful. These big revelations about X, Y, and Z, I'm like, nah, that's okay. I mean, that's fine. It just seems like part of the story, basically.
That was the other thing. I think if you do a structure like that, and you damn well better have a really interesting thing to show me at the end.
Yeah.
Like, it better not be that somebody was dead the whole time. But, you know, other than that, it can be whatever. But this doesn't seem like it even has any information it was concealing, and that's why it was structured that way.
Yeah, and so,
or at least I couldn't piece together what they were, if they were getting at something bigger than we had just the events that we watched, you know?
And I think, yeah, that's like part of, like, one of my notes was that this feels like you're watching the assembly cut of something where they were just like, okay, we got everything shot. We're done shooting. We're out of money or whatever. So like, let's just kind of get it in an order where we can start to make sense of it. And it's, I think I agree. Like, I think the story here is fine. It just does all the like sudden transitions and kind of having to find ways to withhold information from us for our first two viewings so a character can say two lines that we didn't hear yet the mm-hmm. third time through. Like, all those things never let it build tension because it's just such a stop and go reveal of information that just has to go from like one scene that has to end abruptly lest we learn any info to another scene that is just, we've seen it so many times that, oh, but now we finally get to hear from the other side of the door. Oh, great. And then what? Oh, it's back to something I've seen before. And again, the tension just disappears with every discovery. So,
well, that makes me disappointed. Oh, go ahead, but Joshua, sorry.
Like, in the first chapter, we see that like wife, lady, and sister are in the house and wife lady is upset. But we had also seen that the beginning of her like having trouble with the mannequin. So in chapter three, when they go, and guess why wife lady was upset? It was the mannequin. We're like, yeah.
Yeah, we know.
That's the thing. It's remarkable because I really like the setup of someone doing some kind of live stream. And like, you really can't look at the comments while you're doing the thing. And so she would be seeing all this stuff streaming by and talking, and they were saying, look behind you. And like, that bit works. And I like that bit anytime I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it just kind of deflates. Also, Matt and I both observed that it's weird that anyone would say vlog in this day and age. Like,
yeah.
Anyone old enough to remember what it was is aware that it's not happening anymore, you know?
Yeah, look it up on GeoCities.
I post everything on Friendster. Oh, God. Put a bit of my vlog.
Well, the other one, thinking about the overlap of data, and Matt, you laid that out really, really well. I was thinking, like, and I know it's not necessarily fair to compare to other stuff or whatever, but I was thinking about, like, with stuff like Time Crimes or, like, Triangle, mm-hmm. where, mm-hmm. like, you're getting a redo of some stuff, but, like, it's the way that one's done. I was going to say especially Triangle, but then fucking Time Crimes does it great too, where you're like, okay, this is the only thing. And then you as the viewer go, oh, shit. And then you go like, right. Oh, man. And then you're just like on the edge of it. And so that's what this misses, is that kind of like that tension, that kind of rumble where you're like, oh, geez. Oh, not that. It can't be that. And it's like, oh, crap, it is that. Like, it doesn't have that. It just, you kind of just go like, because there's not so much data being held back, or there's not bigger reveals or a bigger something, that it's sort of like anytime those things kind of unpeel that onion, you just kind of go like, yeah, and. Mm. And that's, which I, it's such a shitty, feeling, but like, that's kind of what I like the whole second half of that. There's a lot of and it's sort of like, yeah, maybe the mythology needs something more. Like, maybe it just needs something more. Or if you keep the mythology simple, you need more stakes and stuff. Cause like, there's definitely some transitions and moments too, that just felt very goofy. Like the thing about pack your stuff, you're moving to campus, whatever else. And I was like, did I fall asleep for like 20 minutes and miss like a whole escalation, or like, what the shit? And then like later on the later chapters, it's sort of like they have this whole conversation about how, like, you know, like, oh, if this keeps going along, one more thing, and we want to protect your mental health or whatever. And then it's like that kind of informs that, but not really. And it's sort of like, okay. And then the thing, I think it was by the third chapter when you finally get the thing of like, you know, she was the one driving or whatever else. And it's sort of like, and you know, and some of the way that our guy kind of, the way he progresses, and it's like, and then at some point he says, like, you know, this happened to all of us or whatever else, it didn't just happen just to you, or like, and it's like, I guess in a vacuum, if you are a robot, then that makes sense, but like, infinitely from an empathy standpoint, like, it just turned me off of him entirely, because you're like, sure, that is true, it is your parent too, but she was driving the fucking car, like, you fucking idiot.
That was a remarkable moment of dumb fuckery from.
Yeah, and I was like, so it checks me out. It checked me out entirely. I was just like, okay, I'm just like, all right. And then beyond that, I don't know. Like, I don't belabor this too much. I don't think there's much to really say per se. But a lot of the mechanisms of the town folk, like, just it's one of those things. If you're passing by at 5 miles an hour, you go, okay, whatever. And if you stop to look at it, you're like, wait a minute, because like thing with like the gardener's meeting or whatever else. And then our friend guy from school is like, oh, well, they say it's like the gardener's thing, but it's not, that's not really what they're talking about or whatever else. Like, oh, okay, so it's this open secret. So then how could they ever have had a meeting at any point, because Ghost Lady seems to hang out within city limits, so like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. And then the thing with the gallery, the same thing. It was like, everybody's just bebopping around having a gallery, and then also like, oh, we all gotta fuck off, and like the paintings that we gotta, she's gonna be here. Like, is she just, did she like do like a 4-martini lunch, and she's like, she is gonna haunt, but she's just kind of slow about it? Like, I don't like that mechanism, so frustrating.
She lives on Axl Rose time.
It's like three different times they do that, where it's sort of like, and everybody's just sort of like meanders out of the way, sort of like, it's like when you watch a few flamingos get out of the way of a crocodile, or alligator rather, pardon me, and like, you just, they do that thing where they just kind of go boop 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 boop. It's like, it's not like urgency necessarily, but they just go like, we don't want to eat, and so I just go bop de bop. The alligator goes, yeah, all right. And it's like, and so it's that feeling, it's that like anticlimactic thing, and like, I don't want to be so mean about it, but it's like, that's what this thing is missing, is that urgency of that kind of the difference between watching a few flamingos take a few steps out of the way of an alligator versus the scene in Jurassic Park where the clever girl scene. Like, it's the difference between those two things, and that's what this is missing, is that urgency. And it's like, by the end of it, like, the whole thing about her sitting by the door, I'm like, oh, that'll be the hand by the door. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, then there's a hand by the door, and it's like, and then it just kind of like ends. And it's like, yeah. All right, well.
I guess, yeah. And the cursed town thing, I like. That is a fun idea. You know, that's, I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and he has some of those that are just, this town is fucked all the time, and everybody who lives here is mad all the time because there's a hellmouth under it, right? So that's fun, and like having a ghost that is haunting the whole town is theoretically cool if it were doing more scary things more frequently, because I think there's only just like two scenes where the mannequin does the mannequin thing, and then once it does the full rar, then it's not scary anymore. So if this had a little more time to scare, it actually made me think of, I think it's called Darkness Falls, which the movie had Anya from Buffy in it was why we watched it.
Was that the tooth fairy one?
Yeah, the whole town haunted by the tooth fairy, and at the end they have to like go to the lighthouse and reflect the light and kill her. And I was like, that's what this movie needed. It just needed a big ass bonkers ending. And maybe a couple more scares throughout, and you can find more room for that when you don't tell your story three times.
Yeah, maybe tell a complete story through once, and then you still got two more acts to do more cool stuff.
Well, and then one of the motivations too with our main girl, or the wife lady, is that like, oh, having to move from the big city and like move out to the sticks or whatever else. But at really very no point do we get her having to like rub elbows with the bumpkins, and that doesn't go good. Like, you know, they say, like, oh, she's a city girl and they have to move to the sticks, whatever else. But then there's no stick problems. Like, it's kind of, it's like, which you totally would expect. It would motivate
her. Wi-Fi seems perfectly capable of handling her vlog. So.
it's just one of those things, like, the
which
one
is an indoor kid activity also. I don't know what she's complaining about.
Yeah, like, you could do that from Antarctica, for fuck's sake. And it's just sort of like, so, it's, there's some things that are set up that don't go anywhere. And then the rules and the threat don't have a lot of carry through. So just everything has this just massively telegraphed feel. And so while I admire the effort to making a traditionally shot thing, and like I said, there's a few moments in there that do work. On the overall, it's a very, very underbaked kind of thing. So I got to the end of this, and I hate doing this, but I get to the end of this, and I just went like, I got that shitty 24-year-old thing of like the people that were saying this was super scary were like plants, and it's like in the back of my mind, they're like, and it's like, well, no, not necessarily. If you've seen that guy
is a ficus.
If you've kept...
the guy behind the ficus. What?
But it's like if you've seen 40 scary movies, and like, okay, if you've not seen these mechanisms done tons better, then like, yeah, that's probably gonna stick in your ribs. Probably the same way it would if I was like 15. I was okay. But it's just like, so I'm not mad at this guy for the way the movie. It's a bummer because like all these mechanisms that do have a natural way of working just were kind of prevented from doing so.
So. Yeah, I mean, maybe this will be someone's I Know What You Did Last Summer and they'll have fun with it. And that's cool.
Yeah.
I was, by the way, genuinely surprised how much I was jazzed up by the I Know What You Did Last Summer reboot trailer.
Oh, I cannot fucking wait.
I'm surprised you would be surprised to think you like that. That seems right up your alley.
I didn't very much like the first couple I Knows What You Did Last Summer's.
Oh, they're not good. Yeah.
And I think part of it is that I went to see the second one in the theater with Leah, the girl that I thought that I was going to marry at the time. Because we were on vacation in Washington, D.C., and we had run out of things to do. And so we sat there, and like she really enjoyed it, and I thought it was super dumb, and it caused a rift. And this was in 1997. Mm. Back in 1997. But I still, like, I've just never had any affection for that. But seeing, like, Freddie Prinze Jr. coming all grizzled. Now we do things around here. Like,
I was like, oh,
keep doing this, you know, keep doing, like when you put Devon Sawa and Jordana Brewster in a movie, just keep doing this, just do it for me. I don't care. So, excited for that. But this one less so. I think it is like a 4 out of 10 mannequin lawn walkers.
Nice. I'm a little harsher on it. I gave it a 3. out of 10. I do have my final note I had in my letterboxed was that cold open fucks. So if you want to just watch the beginning because it's on Shudder or whatever and you can get at it.
You want to see a cool short?
Yeah, the first 15 minutes, yeah. Just pretty fucking good. Gangbusters. Yeah, it's like it really sets you up. You're like, okay, this is really... This is cool. Like, this is going to give us a thing. And then just like,
nope.
The whole rest of the movie is not that. Yeah. It's like, nuts.
No, señores.
So, yeah, no, I mean, I just, you know, I love the idea that if somebody's really not seen a whole lot of stuff, there's some things in this that'll probably work really well for them. And I appreciate that. I appreciate anybody going away from goddamn found footage to making actual things. So that makes me happy, too. That's just my own thing. But, yeah, just the telegraphingness of this just was really irksome. And so I got to the end of it and just kind of did a shrug. So I think I'll probably be in the same spot as Josh. I think it's like, you know, I'm not, like, super angry with it necessarily, but it's kind of a shrugging kind of thing that sort of could have been a lot. Could have been a lot more and just sort of undercooked sort of deal. So yeah, I mean, 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10. What the fuck was the interview about finding the realtor thing? Like, what? Like, okay, what? Sure. This guy cost me a lot of money. You hold a camera. Okay, no offense to cameramen out there. I don't mean like that. But in that particular instance, how could that guy cost anything? Like, yeah. Your job, Reginald, is to sit on the couch and make sure the camera doesn't fall over. Like, it's very expensive. Like, okay, sure.
Such a... we gotta pay for talent and superiority. Yep. And finally, we must talk about La Sociedad de Talentos Muertos, or Dead Talent Society.
Oh, God.
This is one of the... A thing that I think is delightful every time I see it, which is just like machinations and bureaucracy of afterlife kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Afterlife as life, like all of the parts of Beetlejuice that are on the other side of the wall. And this has a ghost society that is in tandem with our own. And they have a whole like cable network and reality shows and like influencers and people who are trying to move up in the ghost world. So if you die, you become a ghost. As soon as people quit remembering you, kind of Day of the Dead style, then you're gone forever. You glitch out. So most of being a ghost is trying to go viral so that more people will know about you and you can become like a folklore or urban legend. But now all you need is like a good video. So into this whole thing, we have someone who is recently deceased and in danger of glitching out and has no talents or skills to make her like a towering figure in the afterlife. So it is just a drama about her trying to get the attention that she has never been able to command in her life. And it's just this very tongue-in-cheek kind of adorable thing.
Yeah.
Also, it makes YouTube influencers look like dumbasses, which I love because they are, and they're also very wealthy.
Yeah, I thought this was great because this does that bold move of just going, here's our world. It may look kind of like yours. However, it has all these completely different, you know, rules and functions and realities, and just shut up and come along with us. We'll explain the parts you need to know and don't worry about the rest. And, this just painted such a great, fun, weird little chaotic world of like pageantry meets bureaucracy, like meets, yeah, YouTube fame, like, and just like has some heart to it too, though. Like you get to watch people kind of lay their soul bare here and there and goes well, gets played for comedy sometimes gets played for sincerity, but like it kind of gave you a lot to really kind of sink your teeth into. I had a great time with it.
Yeah, the scene where our like lead girl goes home to visit her parents is just like that actually got some tears from me. It's so gentle and just so resists boldly the opportunity to make it funny or undercut it. It just gives you that experience. Like that was lovely.
Yeah. They really seem to have, there's a certain amount of care and like warmth that goes along with all the lunacy. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why it works is that like you do get a sense of like care for these guys. Like they're kind of goofy, But it's sort of like, and then you get the human world, and you get the other part of it, and you get the kind of mundaneness, which, you know, nobody does, you know, bureaucracy applied to the afterlife, much like Taiwan, Hong Kong, Japan, Korea. Like, they're really good at it. It's just, and it's and in ways that you just are so innovative and interesting. And so, like, the scene where, like, they keep doing the thing about the car, the underpass, where it's just keep doing the thing, like, oh no, he stopped, but it was like a foot too late. It's like, okay, fuck's sake. And the bit, like, it made me laugh for rewatching this. The thing with the one lady, I always forget the names mixed around, but the one in the gymnasium, and like they're watching from the doorway, and then they just go like, yeah, she really puts a lot of effort, she puts a lot of heart into it, and see her like do a little crab walk past the camera.
Yeah.
Fucking died laughing. It's just like, just little bits like that, so they do get the humor, and they've got great timing for humor, for sure, like, yeah, 10,000%. But they also seem to be able to know when to kind of remember that you are kind of also making a character movie in a way. And like, it's every bit of lunacy that you keep adding, like, you still have to kind of keep the main people sort of at the center of things, and what really actually is affecting them in these different ways. And like the they'll introduce some, like, and I'm sorry, maybe it's just me, maybe other people got tired of it. Every fucking time they had one of them holding a plate or like messing with the guy's computer or whatever, and then, like, you cut between like the person experiencing the human experiencing it, and then like watching the person go boo boo boo.
It's such a perfect thing, because we never think about, like, in Poltergeist, if you could see the ghost, it's just stacking chairs on a table.
Yeah,
right.
And then just like, there we go, and kind of brush the dirt off his hands and like floats away. And that's what we get here. Just the standing just in front of the guy and banging on his keyboard. It's beautiful.
And then the thing with the guy with the crick in his neck too, getting on the elevator, where she's like sitting on his shoulders. And it's like the first shot you get of her sitting on his shoulders, and look on her face, it just sort of kind of whoop. Just spits like that. Like, that comedy, that funny stuff works so good. It just, it has a good clip to it. They're not like sitting in it forever. It has just like a good pace to pop, 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 pop. But they're just also allowing these characters to actually be characters in intermixed with all this nonsense. And so it's sort of it's a hell of a magic trick, because it's like none of that, you know, honestly, I mean, I think it wouldn't be out of bounds to say that it shouldn't really work. It should wear out its welcome and be really kind of like annoying and kind of at a certain point kind of, you know, kind of be over with and then just whatever. But there's something about the way they just clip along that just sort of, I don't know, it's a bit of a magic trick.
I think it's not too wacky, where they don't spend the whole time in like that heightened fast talking and TV announcer reality TV kind of thing. Yeah. That just, once we're done with that at the beginning, then we can kind of settle into a more human pace. Right. Mm-hmm. And there was another thought, and it's right on the tip. And the other thing is, they don't feel the need to explain how the afterlife works to the nth degree, because mm-hmm. we see that people like, some people just have like the injuries of their death on them all the time.
Yeah.
And some people just look normal. Some people have certain superpowers and some people don't. And like, the ghosts can get injured and bleed and stuff, but at the same time they can jump off a 4-story building and not die. So you just kind of go, yeah, okay, whatever works. Like,
right,
yeah. The guy accidentally runs the ghost over, and then when she's trying to get in the car, just drags her away. And there's just a red streak all the way up the road, and that is fucking funny. And you don't ponder, like, well, okay, do the ghosts have blood, and when does the blood come out? And like, we better have blood expert, you know, come out here and shine a blood light on this. And
but, yeah, well, it just kind of like it. The movie expects you to just meet it on its own terms, the way like a kid does when they watch a cartoon. You don't know why monsters can get sucked into a tiny little ball and evolve into things. Like, they just, it just does. Okay. Like, duh, it's in front of you. So yeah, I think the movie is wise to just let these things exist and take them on its own terms.
It'd be the answer when somebody says, well, how does it do this? And you're like, demonstrably. It does.
Yeah. You're looking at video evidence. Would you like me to enhance?
That is kind of like when NASA was trying to build a transporter and they wrote the Star Trek writers and said, how does your Heisenberg compensator work? And they responded, very well, thank you.
That's excellent.
That's funny.
So yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say about it. It was just a fun little thing.
It's a joyous experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Just made me happy a little bit deep down inside, you know, like Odd Thomas or something like that.
Yeah.
Just weird. Or, you know, like in a bigger format, Dead Like Me or Pushing Daisies or something like that. It's just, we've got a bunch of arbitrary rules about how life works and it's kind of a bureaucracy and it's very similar to our lives, but you know, just a little bit weirder. Also loved just giving them that opportunity to play with all of the standard types of ghosts mm-hmm. in Chinese and Japanese cinema. Cause you got like the bride with white hair kind of thing.
Yeah, that was but cool.
You have like 12 dozen of them are just in the like white gown and long black hair. Cause apparently that's really stuck with everyone after The Ring. And there's one lady who haunts an outhouse and her big thing is she just smells like poop. Look, I'm a simple man. That was fucking delightful.
Yeah.
Well, the bit with the one girl when she does the thing where like, oh yeah, we have to do that kind of ghost whatever else. And she like takes her hair and she's like pushes it in front of her face. That's another one of those little like, kind of behind the scenes-y kind of things that just tickled me to no end. It was just sort
and
of
they
like,
did like they did the some of the Leslie Vernon stuff too, where they're like, mm-hmm. "Oh, she's doing a teleport. Here's yeah. how a teleport works." Like, oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, yeah. Just like I said, I just think it's a hell of a magic trick to like bring in some just legitimately goofy, kind of silly slapsticky things that are handled super well. A very, I would say, sincere kind of character drama at points, and then also mm-hmm. just like creating this whole goddamn world and like sets mm-hmm. of rules and circumstances, and you're just like, well, all right then, like off we get, and it's just like, I just there's a creative juice to that I just really think is awesome, and so yeah, just like this is one of those ones like, well, and then it's on Netflix of all fucking places, but it was just sort of yeah. like. And it was just so when they saw this would pop up, they're like, this is going to be for a certain kind of people, and the certain kind of people are going to enjoy the shit out of it.
And I am those people.
So we must remember to tag 825 Forest Road with Mom Dies in a Car Crash. And this one with Surprisingly, It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Because now we yeah. just say that all the time.
It's true.
All the time. Honestly, poor moms. Like the car crashes. I feel like we should do a PSA.
Disney.
Like a fundraiser or something.
Yeah.
Is it in every movie of every genre? They're just like, well, Ma got cancer and then she died in a car crash. Wiped out her life savings, curing the cancer, and then she was hit by a cigarette truck.
One last little thing, as Josh said about the little bit of the cheery moment kind of things. The thing where they're all dressed up like the girl. And they're just running along.
My God, that's beautiful.
So it's just like, it's so fucking
that's what charming. I mean,
awesome. Yeah. So real. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just something, like, there's like the one dude, it's like a kind of a middle-aged sort of stocky guy with like facial hair and the glasses, also wearing the school yeah. girl thing. And
the franchisees don't look quite as good as the
yeah, it's just like, but it's so endearing and sweet, like in this like really weird way. It's like, ah, God bless you, man. At some point, we got to do his first movie, because we've done, there's the American Detention, which is a different thing entirely, but his first movie is called Detention. Caused a big hullabaloo with the Chinese government and a bunch of other stuff, but I don't know where the hell you find it, but at some point it'd be fun to get back and kind of track that down. But yeah, just I'm really glad, I'm very glad that you guys enjoyed this, because I was really hoping that was gonna be the case.
It wants you to be happy. Like, it's, I think watching this and Jenny Penn in the same week was a good balance.
Yeah.
Because Jenny Penn wants you to be very uncomfortable and even upset at times. And this one just pretty much constantly wants you to be happy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to describe it. It's, there's a joyousness to it that's so weird but wonderful.
I just really like Mustache Man. and his fake little mustache because he used to be in a boy band. He wanted to be in a boy band.
So good.
The mustache is so sticky.
With the mustache on, I don't know. He reminded me so much of Dave Grohl like the whole time. I was like, does that ever happen to you? And he's like, 1 in 10. She goes running by at the end, and he's like, there goes my hero. And, I had fun. So whether you make your own fun or you find it in, on the screen itself, Dead Talent Society, super fun. So I would give it, it's not as important, I guess, as Jenny Penn, but it really made me happy, and that's important too.
Yeah.
8 out of 10. Man, when she lands on the sign and does the full, like, her superpower is just being electrocuted. Like, God damn it, that's great.
Right there too, actually, with the 8 out of 10. This is just a blast to watch. It doesn't take long to really get going. And they do, one of the things I should point out last minute too is the gal they cast for our lead does this amazing job of looking like every self-conscious, disinterested teenager type ever. Mm. But the couple of times they make her scary, she's legit scary too.
Yeah.
And so, like, at some point in the movie, I realized, like, wow, they really must have spent time finding this person. And she's fantastic in that. So, yeah, I wanted to give her a little bit of props too. Excellent.
Yeah, and I'm the high man on the totem pole, and that's like, you know, it's sort of like if I'm nothing, I'm somebody who really enjoys like the kind of mushing of genres in ways that sort of like can be a perilous journey, but can also really work. And so, like, you know, the kind of the end of the apocalypse of the world, where sort of like you can just mush a bunch of things together. And so, like, this just is in that same realm where, like, this should play like a normal comedy. It should be a slapstick thing. No, it should be like a ghost thing. It should be kind of like a workplace situational kind of, you know, Korean kind of Thai, Bunese type of thing. Like, no. It's going to be all of them. It's like, huh. And we're also going to create this whole other mythos about how the afterlife works. Like, fantastic. So, it's just the level of creative chutzpah to this. It's just, it's joyous beyond all reasons. I just admire the shit out of this guy and everybody that made this, for just putting this thing together and having this much creative sincerity. And that line where she, I was saying about the thing with them all running and when the outfits, and that line, mm-hmm. I think she says something like, you know, like something, you know, wanting to be seen and wanting to feel the, you know, feeling love of being alive, whatever else. It's just like, God fucking damn it. So yeah, it's just hats off. So yeah, say 8.5 out of 10. Just somebody getting dinked on the back of the head with like a little like a saucer plate. It's just inherently fucking hilarious. It's from now to the end of time. It just, I can't explain why. It's just dunk. It's so funny. Out of 10. So yeah, there you go.
Oh man, every bit of that scene where they're trying, like, the couple is arguing and they're trying to scare them, and like they knock over the plates, like, why are you so clumsy? Oh my God. Beautiful. Okay, we'll take a quick one and then we'll tell you exactly what's going to happen next time.
Yes.
So next up, we are going to watch a couple of new things, and all of the new things, actually. We are going to do Sinners next week. We're going to talk about it. If you haven't seen it, I hate to wreck it for you, but I do think it is one of the best things I've seen in a movie theater in several years. So I hope you like it. It's not perfect, but it did leave me absolutely breathless. We're also going to watch Dead Letter on Shudder, and It Feeds, which is currently like a video on demand wherever you get those. That's like a $4 watch. So Sinners, Dead Letter, and It Feeds is what's happening. I've been Josh this entire time, and I say good night.
We will have a short as well. No one liked the one this week, so we'll try again with one that maybe no one will like again next week.
An even worse one.
I'm just going to get them out of my system, I guess. So, hey, Quiet Apocalypse will be the short for next week. We'll see how this tone poem goes for the guys. And hey, don't forget the Minnesota Genre Film Exposition is accepting submissions. If you, someone you know, is a filmmaker, let them know about that. And if you just hang out in places on the internet that talk about movies, talk about that. Maybe people want to be able to send their stuff in so we can get seen by an audience. If you would do that, we'd appreciate it. All that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Down in Austin. Take care of yourselves and take care of each other. And yeah, definitely what Matt was just saying. You know, also, if you're at any kind of festival thing or if any kind of a screening-y thing or something, you know, anything like that, and you see something, you're like, wow, that was really neat. I know Troy in the past and Chip and folks have some overlap with different things and different exposure and stuff. Like, oh, this was this thing that was playing this festival. This was playing this thing. And so that's cool. That's awesome. Like, that's a great thing, you know, because festivals are tricky and like our good friends over at Chattanooga and other festivals, like, you know, smaller things like that. Like, it's tough going, but it's for passion and enjoyment and love for this kind of stuff. So you see something that makes you excited, like this, in that realm, like, definitely let us know, because, you know, certainly there's zero ego. It's the only purpose above everything else besides distraction from day-to-day life and mortality is to be able to put really neat stuff in front of people. Because if you can be in a theater full of people and show them a short, like, curve, and you can feel 100 some odd buttholes pucker at once, like, you've done something good for the world. So, you
know, that's a great disturbance in the force.
Yes. So it's absolutely pass along any which way from loose. But until then, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. We'll talk to you soon. All right, we'll see you later. Bye bye.